Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We are here to hear arguments in case number 141825, Liu Junhong against the Boeing Company. Mr. Wolf.
Thank you, Chief Judge Wood. I am Eric Wolf. May it please the court. I represent the Boeing Company, and with me at council table is Bruce Campbell and Bates Larson. The district court erred in granting remand because admiralty jurisdiction and federal officer jurisdiction are proper given the nature of the flight, the nature of the accident, and the specific allegations in the complaints. And this court has jurisdiction to review because under the plain language of 1447D, this is a remand order in a case removed pursuant to 1442.
So why is it if 1440, I mean, basically this whole appeal is about jurisdiction, right? So why is it if, even if the federal officer ground of removal by hypothesis were appropriate, we would have authority to exercise effectively pendant appellate jurisdiction over your admiralty ground?
Yeah, our position is just that the reference, by referring to the reviewability of the order, that everything fairly encompassed in the order is reviewable, and actually the statute uses the word shall be reviewable by appeal.
So now, how many appellate courts have agreed with your position?
On 1442, this case would be the first appellate court. The only other case we could find was this Eighth Circuit opinion that came out shortly after the amendment in 2011.
But what about the civil right? What about 1443?
So that one has been around since 1964, and you know, our view on, and there are multiple Court of Appeals decisions. We did not find one in this court. Our view on those decisions is that they're just wrong.
There are quite a few of them. There are about six of them that you think are wrong.
Yes. You have these decisions that are early on, such as Appalachian Volunteers in the Sixth Circuit. You have a Third Circuit case, I think in 1971. They put in their 28-J letter this Fourth Circuit case from 1976, which relies on the others. They all just take this legislative policy. They say, you know, there's this policy that generally we shouldn't review remands, and so we're only going to review this narrow issue. And our view on that is, at the time, that was sort of the prevailing mode of statutory interpretation, and the Supreme Court is just much more textually focused. The Yamaha decision clearly emphasizes that. This court's decision in Brill versus Countrywide emphasizes that there's nothing ambiguous about the order. It's the remand order, and it shall be reviewable.
So if we're going to look at the Supreme Court, which seems like a good idea.
Sure.
What about the language in cases, for example, Kircher, that seems to focus in on the ground? This is not 1292B, after all. This is a different statute. This is 1447. And in Kircher, and it's not the only case, but it happens to be a recent one, the court's very focused on the ground. And actually, if you go back to Thermtron, it's the ground of the remand that either brings it within appellate jurisdiction or not.
So I have two points to make on that, that are one of which is in our briefing and one of which is not in our briefing. First, in terms of Kircher, and the other is Power Acts, our view is that the mode of reasoning in those cases actually supports us, because they had other issues that were not jurisdictional, that in the normal course would be reviewable, but because they were in an order that's unreviewable, then they're not reviewable. And we're just the flip side of that. So that's the parity of reasoning argument, that if you reason the same way as in those cases, in our situation, because the order is reviewable, the other issues are reviewable.
But I don't see that in the statute, I mean, or for that matter, in the Supreme Court's language. One has to look at the ground of the order remanding.
So that goes. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, go ahead.
Oh, well, that goes to the second point, and this is not something we put in our brief, but I think it's kind of in the backdrop. It's the, and that is the Thermtron versus Hermannsdorfer take on 1447D. So the ordinary reader of 1447D thinks that remand orders are never reviewable.
No, we know what Thermtron
yes,
did.
But what Thermtron... then you're doing better than me, because sometimes Thermtron's hard to apply. But what Thermtron created, and I think courts sometimes may get lulled into this, is that it's an issue-based thing. And so I have to see if it's the type of issue I can review or not. And so the plain language of the beginning of 1447D doesn't mean what it says, because it's got this gloss on it. But the second part of 1447D, there's no reason to put any gloss on that. It's perfectly clear. The order is one in remanding a case removed pursuant to 1442, and that's reviewable.
Well,
and
but the pursuant, I mean, you're sort of evading the question, because the whole question, as I said, let's assume that the federal officer ground that you rely on is reviewable, and we can decide whether that actually works here or not. What I'm trying to explore is the other half of your case, because I think the last bit of 1447D is indeed quite clear. There are these two statutes, there are these two grounds, if you will, of removal that are reviewable, but other grounds not. Now, we may have our opinions about Thermtron, but it's what the Supreme Court said about how one should approach 1447D, and it's up to us to make it work.
Your Honor, I do not see Thermtron as bearing on this question, because Thermtron is actually making things reviewable in the first part of that that on the plain language are not reviewable. And it doesn't, in any respect, interpret the word order, which is the key word for our purposes. So it's not as if it said, the issue of a 1442 removal can be reviewed on appeal. It says the order remanding the case, and that's what we've appealed, is the order remanding the case. And if you put the Thermtron gloss onto it, which is actually kind of a reverse Thermtron gloss, because it's now using Thermtron to come up with things that are not reviewable. As opposed to Thermtron, which is saying, no, actually, here are some things that are reviewable, even though the statute sort of doesn't say that. If you put that gloss on it, then we have the word order in 1447D meaning something different than what it means in these other provisions.
I think what you do, though, is you really open up a huge possibility of appellate review in these cases. And if you hold tight to the reviewability of 1442-based orders of remand or 1443-based orders of remand, then you make sure that, as the Supreme Court was so critical in a number of cases, that we don't wind up with years of litigation about whether something should be remanded or not remanded. That's what they said in Kircher again.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, in these types of cases such as this one, first of all, that's an empirical guess.
And there's no relation, really, to most of the facts that support your admiralty ground to the facts that you're using to support your federal officer ground.
That's fair.
So it really quite expands the case.
It does, although the policy that the plaintiffs have emphasized is just a policy of not having remand appeals. They don't dispute that there can be an appeal on the federal officer issue. So we have
No, and I'm not disputing that either. But the no appeal policy could also mean control. You know, appeal what Congress said can be appealed, and don't appeal other things.
But I think at this point I should probably get into
yeah. Why don't you get into your
merits,
federal officer
yes,
part?
Our,
because I have some issues there
too. Our view is we have appealed what Congress says we can appeal, which is the order. But on federal officer, which of course is reviewable, our view is that this case is unique in that we have complaints that right in the text of the complaint, they are citing the system safety analysis. They say there was not a proper and effective system safety analysis. That is a regulatory project. It's a regulatory term of art. It comes from 14 CFR 25.1309, and it is an analysis that is done of systems so that they can get certified.
But,
and
you know, the interesting thing about your argument is you seem to conflate, you know, in your view, I think if somebody performs any functions for the FAA, then that person is always performing functions for the FAA, just as though he or she worked for the agency. And I can well imagine that you might have an engineer who spends a certain amount of time exercising the delegated authority, doing some kind of review, and then finishes that job and then puts her hat back on as a Boeing employee and goes about doing things that are clearly not pursuant to FAA delegation. As I see the complaint, it's failed to perform an effective system safety analysis during original design of the aircraft, not during the FAA-based review.
Well, the system safety analysis is only
during original design, not forever, but at the one moment.
Well, it is something that is done with the design of the systems to show compliance with 14 CFR 25.1309.
No, but listen, here's how I envision it anyway. You can tell me if it's wrong. There are things that Boeing needs to do to design and build airplanes, and it does those things. And then there is a review function that the FAA or its delegate, which in this instance is in part Boeing, does, which are done with the manufacturer's actions in mind. So there are actually two different things here. There's what did you do and did you do it right? Those are the two things. And I think that the plaintiff's complaint, for the most part, is looking at the what did you do. I don't see that they are alleging that it was error to certify anything.
Well, I do disagree with that, Your Honor, because when they say it was not a proper and effective system safety analysis, that is a certification activity. So that is right in the heartland of things that FAA delegates do.
So why do you keep dropping the last few words of their allegation during the original design of the aircraft?
Well, I don't know exactly what they mean by that. And in fact, on most of this stuff, they refuse to engage. Their entire brief to this court never takes up what they meant by any of that language. We made it perfectly clear that we're saying that goes to the heart of certification. They've said nothing. And our view on that is, in a typical case for an aviation accident that's brought against Boeing, It's usually an older aircraft. The complaint is that there should have been some updates, that there had been some incidents, and you should have updated this way or that way. This accident is unusual. This allegation is unusual. We're not coming to this court with some theory that's going to bring every case to this court.
I just don't see that. Maybe Boeing can, but the thing that troubles me is that Congress actually provided for federal jurisdiction in major court events in the Multi-Party, Multi-Forum Trial Act, the 28 U.S.C. Section 1369, but that's only triggered when at least 75 natural persons are killed, and fortunately, no number like that happened here. So Congress hasn't said that these cases always belong in federal court.
And we're not saying that either.
And you're an in-state defendant, so you can't remove from the Illinois court on diversity. And so you have yet to convince me that there is a logical limit to your federal officer argument.
Well, let me try harder. The limit for us, it is not subject to the well-pleaded complaint rule, but in this particular case, all we really have is the complaints and then the plaintiffs not wanting to say anything about how they're going to litigate their case. All they will say is, we have not pleaded a negligent certification case. That's all they, and we have not sued a human being. We've only sued Boeing. That's all they will say. They won't own up to how they're going to litigate.
Well, I read their brief. You don't need to characterize
sure.
Their brief.
But given this particular complaint, where they have a particular allegation that goes right to a certification activity, our view is that does it. They are going after activities that were taken on behalf of the FAA administrator.
So you think once it's certified by the FAA as airworthy, that's it?
No, that is not our position. Our position is not that any time you challenge product design, that definitely puts you into the realm of challenging certification. We are going at a particular this is an important principle. For this particular litigation, admiralty jurisdiction is sort of our more important ground because it would exist for every single complaint because it's based on how the plane
So you're viewing admiralty jurisdiction, as I understand it, is that all overseas flights fall into admiralty jurisdiction.
No. All overseas flights where the alleged negligence takes effect over the water. And the negligence, that they have never disputed that the negligence that they are alleging, which is that these systems should have provided warnings in the 17-mile straight-in approach over water, they have never disputed that their allegations go to that period of time. And that period of time is the period of time that matters for determining locality. And ultimately, even under their own test, you have the emotional distress as the plane is so close to the water that it's spewing up water.
Okay, your time is up, so I will call on Mr. Miller.
May it please the court. Good afternoon. My name is Arthur Miller. I appear for the plaintiffs. I'll start with the question of appellate reviewability. According to Boeing, the world consists of one word, order. That's the only word they focus on in 1447D. What they ignore, and Your Honor pointed out several of these points. Their alleged claim of unambiguous basically has been rejected by four circuits, somewhere between 12, 16, 18 court of appeals judges have not found order unambiguous.
So let me ask you this, though, Mr. Miller. You look at 1447D, and it does begin an order remanding a case, and I mean, why isn't it in for a penny, in for a pound? Once you've got an order that can be subject to appellate review, doesn't it make more sense just to review all the reasons that might support?
There's a superficial logic to that. It smacks of efficiency. However, that is not what Congress decided in 1887 when it enacted the forebear of 1447D. It is not consistent with the policy of 1447D as enunciated throughout its history.
Why not? I said, why? Why isn't it?
Because as Judge Wood wrote in her opinion in Atkins, the whole objective of 1447D is to make the forum decision expeditiously.
Isn't that exactly the problem? You agree that an appeal here is authorized by the last clause of 1447D since Boeing is arguing for federal officer removal. And then, given that the appeal is here, how can it be more expeditious not to decide one of the two issues in that appeal?
What is expeditious possibly in this case may not be expeditious in the long run, because if Boeing's argument is accepted and a 1333 admiralty claim can be appended, because that's what we're talking about, this is a form of appellate appended jurisdiction, if you can append a 1333...
Was Yamaha a case of pendant appellate jurisdiction?
No, I think Yamaha is based on 1450.
No, I understand it's a different statute, but I wonder whether, in your view, Yamaha is a case of pendant appellate jurisdiction. The court said the statute authorizes review of the order, and therefore no particular argument made about the order is pendant. It's just authorized by the statute. So if I understand Boeing's argument here, it is that the last clause of 1447 allows review of the order if the removal was for a particular reason. They're completely parallel. Now, it may be that the result will be different, but I don't understand why one would be pendant appellate jurisdiction and
as
the other
they
not.
Say in the real estate business, Your Honor, location is everything. 1447 and its word order is embedded in a statute that is designed to prohibit appellate reviewability. 1453, and for that matter 1292B, it's embedded in two statutes that invite.
I don't think you're going to get anywhere relying on the statute. I mean, one could say that what had happened in Thermtron and since Thermtron is that the Supreme Court itself has busted the order, has broken down the order into the reasons for the order, and therefore, since that's what Thermtron and its successors have done to the first use of the word order in 1447, we should do the same thing to the second use of the word order. That sounds like the nature of the argument.
Well, that is part of the argument. The other part
is practical.
One might think
that would make Thermtron
even worse. If I could finish the thought I started before, if you allow a 1333 admiralty case to be appended to a 1442 or a 1443, you face the reality that there is no way of stopping appending a 1332 diversity question, a 1332 amount in controversy question.
Well, the question would be whether the claim is frivolous, right? If people start making federal order removals, or for that matter, civil rights removals, and the Court of Appeals concludes that that claim is frivolous, there will presumably be sanctions. But I take it that it's given here that the argument for federal officer removal, right or wrong, is not frivolous. It's not a connivance to create federal jurisdiction.
I would say it's facile. I wouldn't call it frivolous.
Mm-hmm.
The notion that ex post sanctions will deter whatever motivation there may be to seek interlocutory appellate review. For major companies like Boeing, that's a cost of doing business. I don't see sanctions as much of an impediment.
So you're basically saying that there's nothing special about admiralty jurisdiction. What there is that's somewhat unusual in this case is the FAA's delegation to the very companies that it's regulating, here Boeing, to perform some of the regulatory oversight that in other industries is typically performed by agency employees.
There's no doubt that if you accept not only interlocutory appeal and the notion that Boeing is a federal officer in the context of this case, you multiply the number of instances in which a traditional air crash accidents of the kind you had before you 10 years or 8 years ago in Bennett get moved from the state to the federal courts, and the number of instances in which there will be requests for interlocutory appellate review under 1447D because you've magnified the possibility of federal officer.
Well,
it's a 1-2 punch that's very dangerous.
Sure. I guess the scenario that you're postulating is that there is some space between frivolous and successful for the federal law, as there is actually in many cases between frivolous and successful, such that people will be encouraged to use either 1442 or 1443 to wind up with plenary review of remand orders, no matter what the additional grounds might have been. Might have been admiralty, as you were starting to say, could have been diversity, could have been anything. And thus there would be even more watering down of the facial prohibition in 1447D that we see.
Absolutely. It seems to me it would eviscerate 1447D in a way that Congress clearly never intended. The addition of 43 in 64, that's a civil rights era move. 2011, federal officer is a reaction to a particular problem that federal officers were facing. I cannot conceive that Congress could have intended this appendant or tag-along or supplemental appellate jurisdiction when it enacted the 64 words or the 2011 words. And it seems to me that's exactly what four courts of appeals have held.
So the price, though, of your position, at least in this case, is it could mean one might say there's questionable federal officer jurisdiction, but maybe there was admiralty, and so it shouldn't have been remanded. So it stays in the district court, which then leads to the broader efficiency of the judicial panel and multi-district litigation trying to get these cases all in California.
Well, again, that is an assumption, namely that its eventual removal and transfer will produce a more efficient result.
Well, that's what the panel's there for.
That's the assumption that the panel has made, or rather that's the finding the panel has made. We can't second guess that.
Well, to the extent you're predicating it on it's more efficient to do it that way than to leave these particular plaintiffs who have no claim against Asiana, they only have a claim against Boeing, to force them into a multi-district litigation in California as opposed to leaving them in their chosen forum, more efficient for whom? Does not strike me that's more efficient
for
the plaintiffs.
That's just a disagreement with the panel's decision to transfer these cases to California.
Well, I suggest, Your Honor.
It doesn't seem to me that having the trial or whatever in California is inefficient. Why is that inefficient?
Well, number one, keep in mind, Your Honor, that the transfer is only for pretrial purposes. In the context of JPML situation, the retransfer to the initiating forum may bring these cases back here to Illinois years after they would have been processed if they just were left in Illinois. There is no empirical evidence.
Maybes. You seem to rely on maybes.
Well, that does happen, but the other thing, I mean, getting back to the point before us, I really think it gets down to how one reads 1447 and whether, as one can find, as I said, language in a number of the Supreme Court's decisions in this area does seem to break it down to grounds for removal. And you don't have as much appellate review if you go by ground than if you go by, let's just look at the whole order. But on the other hand, you know, there are policy arguments putting to one side the JPML's involvement here that might suggest that you should decide which court system this belongs in.
After Thermtron and Carnegie Mellon, as Judge Easterbrook wrote 20 years ago,
the opinions of this court speak for the court. They don't speak for the judge who signs them.
It's perfectly clear you cannot literally apply 1447D. That's, to me, what Thermtron and Carnegie Mellon make clear.
So you must Quackenbush. I mean, you have this whole line of...
You've got to revert back to what was intended by 1447D. And the notion that through the back door of a 1442 or a 1443, you can tack on the very, very core subject matter jurisdiction questions that 1447 prohibit in C, strikes me as the tail wagging the dog. It clearly does not achieve the purpose of 1447D. Even if it might microscopically and speculatively achieve some efficiency in one case. Seems to me that's not true. On federal officer, you read the complaint correctly, Your Honor. The plaintiffs have sued the manufacturer, not a DER, not even Boeing in its delegated capacity. There is no charge of certification violation. There is no charge of violation of a delegated duty. The manufacturer has the duty to build a safe plane. That duty exists from womb to tomb on that plane.
So from state tort law. Now, what is it that they think you've never admitted? Did you just say you're not suing about certification? Or does system safety during original design count, for example?
Those words, system safety analysis and airworthiness, are vernacular in the aircraft air regulation business. Yes, they appear in the regs, but they are also part of common law tort concepts. Conduct by Boeing, which may satisfy for certification, may not satisfy for common law tort responsibility. Maybe they could have made the auto throttle even safer than called for by the regs. Maybe the warning system, although it satisfied certifiability because it did not warn of auto throttle disengaged, that might be negligence. The manuals may have passed muster under certifiability standards, but they might have been written more effectively, informatively, so that a crew would not be confused on landing when this anomaly in the buttonry occurred. In other words, there are many, many things falling within that common law duty, which is what plaintiffs are suing on under state law, that are not in any way controlled by certifiability. And as you correctly pointed out, Your Honor, that responsibility begins when the first pencil in the old days is picked up to start designing the plane. It is anterior, long anterior to the certification phase, when Boeing might slip into a federal assistance or DER.
They do have that role sometimes when they're certifying.
But it's not a one-to-one correlation. They have two existences, and their manufacturer's liability never leaves them. And that's the centerpiece of this case, not delegation.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Miller. Now, your time ran out, Mr. Wolf, but I'll give you 1 minute if you have a last thought you'd like to leave with us.
Sure. Your Honor, I would just point out that the 1447D, the Wright-Miller treatise, actually disagrees with Mr. Miller. It's section 3914.11 in jurisdiction and related matters, and it says that the cases limiting review of the order on 1443 are wrong, and that review should instead be extended to all possible grounds for removal underlying the order, following the plain language. And it says that arguments about potential frivolous inclusions of the removal ground shouldn't carry any weight, which is our position. This court should review admiralty jurisdiction. As explained in our brief, the accident and the allegations do meet the test for admiralty jurisdiction. And the system safety analysis is a regulatory term of art, and they did not deny that in any of the briefing, and they have an allegation going right into delegated activity, and that should be covered by the federal officer removal.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement. The court will be in recess.